A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episodes. The news stands for news, and the cues stands for questions. We're excited to dive into all of that.
We are. It's always a weird time for Star Wars news, where sometimes I feel as we head towards shows or movies, we're repeating themes in the news, but it's also fun to take deeper dives and continue to get excited for the things coming out. So we'll have some Book of Boba Fett news and some important questions coming a little bit later. Before we get to all that, as always, I want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles and growing to choose from for your iPhone, phone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But as always, Joseph, that's not all.
No, we also have an offer from Insight Editions. They are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture books as well. They are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Insight Editions book, Inner Jedi Journal. This is something that they recently sent me, and it is exactly what it says. It's a little journal where you try to be a Jedi, and from a peaceful perspective. It isn't like this week, cut off a hand. It is this week, you know, Be mindful. Hey, this Jedi encountered this problem. How would you handle that? Write some intentions about helping people. It's a lovely little book. So check that out if you're interested. You can use that link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
I'm holding a copy myself, Joseph, in page 22, week 5, Coloring Meditations. You can color Yoda and Luke on Dagobah.
And will you? Are you going to do it, Ken?
I might try. It's a great picture of Yoda on the other side to show you how to color him correctly. But it's got that. But it's also, you're right, it's got some deep stuff. There's one about Rey and Kylo on opposite sides of the war, but had much in common. Have you ever found common ground with someone or met an unexpected ally? This is deep stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I opened it and it made me really happy. I think it's really great, and it also stressed me out of like, oh man, I got a lot of work to do to be a better Jedi.
Yes. But there you go. Good stuff from our friends at Inside Editions.
Exactly.
All right. Let's catch up ourselves. It's been a little bit of a different recording schedule for us. Longtime listeners understand that as we transition. But Joseph, Star Wars, life adventures, all of it, what do you got?
Yeah, I've had some good life adventures, getting out a bit, seeing people and having some fun and all that great stuff. Lots of Star Wars adventures in terms of buying things, to be perfectly honest. I've been talking about on Force Center that I opened the eBay can of worms because I got an email a while back from eBay going, you know, we're going to shut down your account because you haven't used it in years and years. And like, well, I should just open it up. And then like, oh no, every time I see anywhere a reference to a Star Wars thing, I'm like, I bet they have that on eBay. So anyway, I recently got a book that it shows my Star Wars journey. Because as a young kid, I probably saw this book in a bookstore and was like, nah, I'm not that into the Ewoks. But then I saw it on, somebody posted it on Twitter. I think it showed up in a Google search for something. I was like, I have to have that. I got myself a book from 1984 that is called The Adventures of Tebow.
Oh,
and it is written and illustrated by Joe Johnston. And I've had such an Ewok resurgence of, you know, coming to understand them more, appreciate them more, embrace them more. I've embraced the inner Ewok. I'm waiting for that journal. I like Tebow. He's always been one of my favorites. I've watched a couple episodes of that Ewoks cartoon. And I'm kind of fascinated with the transition of what the Ewoks are like in the movies versus the actual cartoon, and apparently this is where some of the ideas for the cartoon were gestating as well. Wow. And then of course it's just amazing to be like, yeah, and then this guy went and made Captain America the First Avenger.
I had to look that up. The Adventures of Tebow, a tale of magic and surprise.
Yeah,
suspense. No, I'm looking at suspense. Okay.
Yeah, magic and surprise sounds like he is doing kids' birthday parties, right? But magic and suspense, right? It's just that I think that's what really got me is it's this investment. It seems like, you know, the Ewoks blew up. There's a marketing push. You know, there's not a lot else going on with Star Wars, but the Ewoks are still being moved forward by Lucasfilm. And it seems like it's this great investment in fantasy.
Yeah.
Star Wars has elements of science fiction. It's more space fantasy, space opera, all that kind of thing. But the Ewoks just seem to really fire people's imagination. They're like, let's just do magic spells and stuff.
If I knew this existed, it completely vanished from my brain. That this is amazing.
Yeah. So like, this is like, I'm going to wait until late at night in some night where my wife has to work late, and I'm going to pour myself a whiskey and read Adventures of Tebow by candlelight. I'm really looking forward to this.
If I may, could I just read the first sentence on the summary here that they got? This is amazing.
Please do.
Tebow, the daydreaming Ewok. He's just out there daydreaming. Poplo's drinking in the corner. I always contend he's a little bit of a wild Ewok. Tebow, daydreaming in the corner. Tebow, the daydreaming Ewok, finds the peace of his village destroyed when Volgar the Duloc reports that Tebow's sister Milani, has been stolen by the giant Grudak. There's a lot of words in there I've never seen in Star Wars before.
Right. That's amazing. It's some stuff that pops up in the animated series as well, and it is just like absolute bonkers fantasy, and I really, really enjoy it.
Wow, you might have won the day.
I'm sure you had a good Star Wars adventure as well. What did you buy from eBay?
I did not buy anything quite yet. I did meet a lot of wonderful folks out at the Schmodown Spectacular Fan Expo. They had the movie trivia Schmodown had their big event. I got to be a guest announcer for the Star Wars Championship match, which was a lot of fun. But always, it's just fun to meet not just listeners of Force Center, but Star Wars fans who know you and I and others from the Star Wars punditry world, and that just automatically just invites wonderful conversations. There was great stuff. I talked to a listener named Bobby. Had some I'd met before years prior, but had some great thoughts on some of the new Thrawn books, which I know you and I haven't taken that deep dive into them, about how that could tie into the Ahsoka series. There's some great, you know, not just speculation and theories, but just like finding the connections and some emotional themes that could be present in both properties, and that kind of conversation. That stuff was good. A listener named Justin Hamilton very emotional about the power of being positive and the struggle of being positive in Star Wars. A listener, Jose, who appreciated our deep dive into Dexter's Diner. And you and I, you know, just we legitimately love that scene and think there's so much there. I got to chat with John Hoey from the Resistance broadcast. He and I have never really sat down, had too much time to talk to each other when we've run into each other at celebrations. He was a lot of fun. You know, his joy for Solo and Rise of Skywalker is right there with ours. And it's just fun to connect with fans on that level. Of course, Alex and Molly Damon, Star Wars Explained, those scoundrels were there as well. And love them so much. So that was kind of fun, Joseph, just to kind of, you know, we can be so isolated as Star Wars fans or podcasters, especially the last couple of years when there's not a lot of in-person connection.
Right.
Just to be out there and about and feel the love of Star Wars is always welcome.
Well, that is great. I was unable to make the event, but it was really nice to see on social media just the parade of people going, hey, look, this cool person's hanging out with this person. And that it is really great when we have community on social media to talk about Star Wars, and I can see different people's opinions and excitement. Mm-hmm. The enthusiasm for, make Solo 2 happen is so great. And then it's cool to see that, hey, that can happen in person too.
Yeah. 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 And especially, you know, I'm so grumpy sometimes about Star Wars online where I just want to remove myself from it. And there's positives to that, I think, and self-preservation to that, I think. But it was just nice to out and about. But I did have something else happen on Sunday, Joseph. So Grace and I generally every Sunday go for a morning coffee walk with our dog Baxter. Baxter's been battling some health problems. He's now blind in his left eye and limited vision in his right eye. So it's a little bit of a slow walk. And you know, as long time pet owners, you know, anyone knows, like you can get you kind of down. You're once a vibrant, happy puppy. He's 14 years old, but he's still a puppy at heart. See him kind of struggling a little bit. It can get you down. And so we're on this walk and a lot of people know it goes viral every now and then where there's a guy on a powered, like an electric powered skateboard, for lack of a better term, who dresses up as Din Djarin and has a Grogu doll strapped to his front, and he just drives around, just zips fast. So that's, as I said before, that's my neighborhood. Almost to the point of I don't want to admit it because he's passed my house type of thing before. But Grace now out for a walk, and there's a bike path that used to be an old train track through the city of Burbank, right? And it's now a walking path and everything. But he was in the street, and it was just us on the sidewalk. Grace, me, Baxter, and we see him coming from a little bit of a distance. Grace is not too familiar with that. She's never really seen it online. She's like, so her mind was blown. And as he's passing close, he's got Grogu, he's full costume, and I yell what you should yell in that situation. I yell very loudly, Mando! And he turns to me, and he has like a voice box. It's a working. And he turns to me, and he turns to us, and he just goes, "You both have a good day." And he just keeps riding on. And
I was so expecting you to say that he said, "This is the way," or some other quote, right?
And here I am, 45, got back pain, beaten down by life, aren't we all? It's been the last couple of years of struggle. We got our little dog who's, tried so hard. We're a little down about it. And he said that I went from 45-year-old cynic to 7-year-old Star Wars Ken. I just was so happy that Din Djarin talked to me.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. And I'm so curious always of, like, is he going someplace? Is that person like on their way? Or are they just like doing rounds, making people happy?
I think he just does rounds. And it's crazy. If anyone's, you've seen the video, he's on that little electric little vehicle he's got there. And number one, great balance of someone who sold his Star Wars figures to get $2 to buy a skateboard that he fell off twice and sold it. I'm always impressed with that. This goes, but I've seen him. He whips down like Burbank Boulevard is a major city street through downtown Burbank. He's on it. He's not on the sidewalk. He's just on the street. And I don't think he's ever been stopped. I don't know if that's illegal or not. I don't think anyone would stop him. He's just a full bounty hunter spreading joy throughout the galaxy.
Well, that is absolutely great. We had many tales of bounty hunting, from you saw an actual one to I bought something on eBay. Both kinds of bounty hunting.
Exactly. So there you go. Those are our Star Wars adventures, but we're not quite done yet. Speaking of bounty hunters, let's take a look at some of these Star Wars news items out there. As I said up top, we're racing towards the Book of Boba Fett. That means a lot of news might be around promotional materials and interviews about Book of Boba Fett. So even though sometimes it's news beats that are repeated, it's fun to take a deep dive in and focus on little things about them. And today we got this idea of the secret life of bounty hunters. This coming from an SFX magazine feature. Big feature article that came out about the Book of Boba Fett. A lot of things in there. It was really cool. But Ming-Na Wen spoke about Fennec Shand and what her place might be in the show. Not too many details. A nice, vague kind of promotional talk, which I enjoy. She said that the working relationship between Fennec Shand and Boba Fett will be, in large part have to do with their connection, being connected by their near-death experiences. That's a shared backstory, as we know, and that makes a shared vulnerability. And both of them learning to get something out of the partnership, particularly she was talking about Fennec Shand, seeing the value of working with somebody, and so this being the time to kind of not work alone, which is something different from the past. So, Joseph, this is the Book of Boba Fett. We know that. His name is in lights. Fennec Shand is going to be a big part of this show. At this point, what do we think Fennec will bring to this particular story?
Yeah, I'm really curious about this because I think obviously she's going to have a large presence. I'm really curious if she is going to have her own character arc, you know, that she is going to start in one place, be challenged, and then be changed by the events, right?
Yeah.
I can see her character having, an end goal. Of some kind that's maybe her own. The way the trailers have really positioned Boba Fett of he is trying to remake the way crime works in the galaxy, right? It's going to we're not going to slaughter each other. It's not going to be out of fear. It's going to be out of respect. We're going to work together and make this work, right? So we already have this kind of this big picture challenge for him. And then everything about it has also in those trailers really set up that there's going to be this internal challenge of who is Boba Fett now. He's not a hunter anymore, right? So we know that there's a lot going on with Boba Fett. So then the question is, does Fennec have an independent want out of sight being on board with this? Let's change the game. Does she want retirement? Stability? Yeah. Is there somebody that she wants vengeance for? That's what I'm my biggest curiosity about Fennec herself. Because even if she doesn't have an arc, even if she's just like, hey, I think this plan that Boba and I have come up with to change the way crime works in the galaxy is great. And that's her motivation. Yeah. It's still great to have a story of bounty hunters where there are two of them who are in on the same goal, right? Because it's going to give them room to debate. Like we both agree on the path forward, but then each individual step, is this the right step to take in the path? And to have two of these characters to bounce off of each other is going to be fascinating regardless.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there. And this idea that she's putting out there of Fennec at this point in her life, after she has, essentially died, kind of thinking, going at it alone, not the way I want to do it anymore. And it could be emotional, could be, I'm not saying they're in any kind of partnership other than the business one, but just like, hey, this is a good friend to have. This is someone I'm connected with, someone I know owe a lot to, but also, the life I led before maybe is less fulfilling, maybe also professionally less fulfilling. I can get more done now. I'm rising in this power structure too. It's a smart move. You've attached yourself to someone who's on the go, and going up and if she believes in what he's trying to do, as you say, that itself is interesting. And we don't know a lot about Fennec. We've been exposed to her now, The Mandalorian, and a little bit in Bad Batch. I would still say, we don't know a ton, but even in Bad Batch, this this rough and tumble, deadly character already kind of flashed some, what I would call some good hearts with Omega. Just a touch of it there. So building on that and seeing where we can go with that, that's some really interesting and proves that Fennec will have a value in the show.
Absolutely. There's a ton of storytelling now to be done with Fennec, but I really like what was established with her in Bad Batch, that she was the young, hot up-and-comer, right?
Yeah.
And even then, right away at the beginning, it's like, yeah, I'm deadly. Yeah, I'm cool. What do you want me to do? Kidnap a child? Okay.
Yeah.
It's already a little rough on her soul, even though we get to see her, like, take it to Cad Bane. She's the up-and-comer, right?
Yeah.
But we get this picture of, like, if that's how it started when everything was young and glorious, what a grind, right? She's been grinding through the darkness of the Empire for all these years to the point where she gets shot in the desert by an idiot child, right? You know, and then resurrected. You can see how somebody's like, I've done this rough job forever, you know?
Yeah.
I am tired of always being, you know, the bounty hunter who has control of her assignment, but never control the bigger picture. Screw that. I want to pick the assignments, you know?
Yeah. Write my own ticket a little bit here.
Yeah.
Some great power in that. Ming-Na Wen also mentioned that the show will delve into the lives of bounty hunters, the secret lives of bees and bounty hunters. And this got me thinking of what do we want to learn about the lives of bounty hunters, Joseph? They are still a mysterious bunch. We get that. They're cool at times. You know, what does Embo do on his day off? Do you want to know that? What do you take that from that statement there?
Yeah, I like that we have had a lot of exploration of bounty hunters in, you know, books and comics, and you can extrapolate that to screen, but it'll be great to get it on screen. Of like, some of them, it's almost like cultural, right? Like Bossk, hunting is a part of the Trandoshan culture, right? You get the picture of somebody like Dengar just wanting to be like, people said I couldn't do this. You know, or then there are other people who have, you know, fallen into it because there isn't any other option, or people who got into it when they're young, like Fennec, thinking it was this kind of this way to get prestige or money. And the truth of it is a grind. So I think seeing that perspective of like, we're older, we've been through this game, we both almost died, we're both in a place of rebirth. Now we're really in a place to feel safe to go, hey, being a bounty hunter isn't that great. It is a lonely, terrifying existence where everybody wants to shoot you in the back. And we both have this moment where neither of us, both of us agree to this idea of honor, and we're not going to shoot each other in the back.
Yeah. I love all you're saying there, specifically just the various reasons people might come to this profession, and thinking of it as a profession, but it is definitely, we've even talked about it as a class of warrior, so to speak, in Star Wars. You know, are you a Jedi? Are you an Imperial? Are you a bounty hunter? Are you a smuggler, a scoundrel? All those kind of wonderful things we celebrate in Star Wars. But just to look at it as who's Toro Calicat of the group? Like, this is how I become famous. Who's like, I just needed a job, and this is kind of fun. Who has a code? Who, dare I say, is the Dexter of the bounty hunting world, who has some weird code to doing these bad things? I would love to see that. And what you say all kind of come into this fine point of, hey, this is essentially a new world with the New Republic. Things have changed. Jabba being gone is a great example of it. Now I'm going to take this, Boba Fett saying, I'm going to fill this vacuum, take this place up here and maybe have a different view on it, and saying I'm not a bounty hunter up top, but still being involved with it. I'm fascinated by just analyzing what everyone wants out of it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, this idea of working together, of symbiosis, of, more than one individual working together for mutual advantage, it's such a big idea in Star Wars. And we see lots of positive examples of it. We see the really destructive cycle that's built into the rule of two. This is so great for that. Like, they're not the good guys. They're not the bad guys. They're the bounty hunters, who are usually pretty bad cynics or realists, quite violent.
Yeah.
But then to see these two kind of tipping into, okay, but we're going to play around in this idea of, you know, together is better than alone. And it's just a really interesting way to explore some core Star Wars themes.
And it's just making me think of one of my favorite films, Gross Point Blank, where Dan Aykroyd's trying to get John Cusack to join the Hitman Union. and if it's a kind of reversal of that. But fascinating. I just fascinated outsiders, the Boba Fett of it all, which we'll discuss more. But yeah, you know, we've all grown up with bounty hunters being this other thing, to the point when I was young and I first heard that that was like a real profession here on Earth, I was really confused as to what that was.
Yeah, I really was too. Of like, what, you dress up like a lizard and you hunt people? You can really do that? Yeah. And I love that with Din Djarin, like the Mandalorian, that he, especially that very first episode when we didn't know anything about him, didn't even know his name, and he held all the mystique of cool bounty hunter. And he's a debt collector to pay for his kids back home, basically, right? Like, he just, yeah, like, the Mithril's not some big challenge. There's some cool violence and everything, but the Mithril's just like, you didn't pay your debts, you weasel, and I picked you up, and I really only did it because my kids back home in the sewer need armor, you know?
Yeah, and he's getting, you know, food and fuel money at times. Like, it's
through. Yeah, it's a really fun take on the glamour of it.
Yeah, absolutely is. We're not done looking at that glamour. SFX magazine has even more in this article. It's the mystery of Boba Fett. And this is a fair question, something we've touched upon before here. But Tamara Morrison, who has said, says in the article, not a comic book or bounty hunter book reader, admits to not reading all of them. So there you go. Toss him out of Star Wars. He spoke about the decades-long mystery of Boba Fett. Now the show will deal with that. And he says, yes, and that's where we kind of opened up too much of the can at times, I think. I did have my reservations. But hey, I trust the people I work with. I was so lucky I had people like Dave Filoni, who has an ability to connect some of the dots, some of the ancient dots, and to keep that authenticity. I relied on him a lot because I'm not one of those actors that, as I said, reads every comic book and every bounty hunter book. Interesting question, Joseph. In a article promoting the show, Tamara Morrison says, I think we went too far at times.
Yes, I would also take this with a large grain of salt. Man, I love Tamara Morrison as a performer, and he is a fabulous actor, and I love his interviews because, look, you know, actors are humans, and in my opinion, they're just different. There are some who are like, some actors who have a little bit of like producer brain, right? And they really try to say kind of what the press release says, mm-hmm, put a little spin on it. And then there are people like Tamara Morrison who's just like, I'm going to tell you exactly what I feel, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's great for honestly, what I read into this is him going like, oh yeah, no, my cultural understanding of Django and Boba, I don't read all these books, I don't have all these things memorized, mm-hmm, is that people love them because they're this mysterious, unknown, you know, just amazing warriors. Who are they really under the mask, right? And if that's his relationship to it and his understanding of the fan love, mm-hmm, and then he's getting scripts like, I tell people about this thing that happened when I was 10. What? Why?
Yeah.
And then having Filoni come over and go, well, here's why. And him going, yeah, oh, okay, cool. Like, I see in this quote a totally natural and great process.
Yeah, I really do as well. And, you know, of all the wonderful things Dave Filoni has done and brought to Star Wars, one of my favorite things is saying, hey, you think you don't want more Boba Fett? Well, I'm going to give you young Boba Fett in the Clone Wars. You think it's kind of silly that George asked me to bring Darth Maul back? We're going to look at Maul in a different light, and we're going to actually find a way to make this work. And I do trust him on that and all the people involved with the show. And I'm sure Robert Rodriguez, by the way, you know, driving force behind this show as well, he understands that mystery because that's probably what brought him to the loving the character. And I really love it. But I think now more than ever, Joseph, I'm intrigued by them saying, or Tamara saying, yeah, we really open up that can. I think now more than ever, I think this is the right time to do it for Boba Fett.
I think so, absolutely. I think it is, for me, I know I've said this a lot, it is the reason to bring him back because, mm-hmm, there is the Boba Fett of just the original trilogy who is absolutely, you know, next to nothing about him except for he's cool enough to capture Han Solo and he's got an awesome ship and he has knee darts, right? And everything about him is legend that you create with your action figures. That was the original trilogy experience. And then, you know, the expanded universe books, gave more information, but they still just made him the coolest possible badass of the galaxy, right? And then everything shifts with the prequels and all these new ideas about him come into existence. And I think what's great about this is really taking the opportunity to marry these things. And that's, I so trust Filoni and everyone involved, but Filoni in particular, right? Because he has such love and understanding for the prequel era. because I think all of the mystique and the badassery of Boba Fett is clearly going to be there. But I'm excited to read this and know, or I guess not know, guess, hope, assume that it's going to deal with his legacy as an orphan of violence. The fact that he had an incredibly rough childhood. You know, bounty hunters do not make great surrogate parents, except for Din Djarin. It makes it me think that we're going to deal with his identity as a Mandalorian. We know that he doesn't like being mocked as a clone.
Yeah.
But what is his actual take on the clones? You know, are they just less than him, but he takes some pride in them because they are also his brothers? Or are they an embarrassment, an insult? Like, he is holding so many identities, and all those identities can be interesting and sit with his original identity of mysterious badass.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you stop at that door, I'm not criticizing Temuera Morrison at all of saying they went too far, but if you stop at that door of, yeah, Boba Fett, a lot of his appeal is a mystery, which, by the way, I would almost say is just a fact. That's a lot of it, because we could all create our own backstories. We discussed discussed that a lot recently on that Behind the Helmet doc they got going on Disney Plus. I think if you just stop at that door, that means you might not have engaged even with Mandalorian or the Clone Wars and see what they've done. That makes me more excited. Now Morrison said this: there will definitely be a number of answers. Some long-winded answers, some short and sharp answers, some colorful answers. We're filling a lot of gaps. Joseph, that is a lot of answers. And a lot of times that's just where, at the end of the day, if you think they kept the mystery while building up some wonderful foundations of this character's identity and origins, and then you're going to be happy with it. If you think they revealed, quote, too much, then maybe you're not going to be happy with it. But we definitely preach it. Keep an open mind for this here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me as a Boba Fett fan, I did love him as this mysterious badass, this unknowable, you'll never know what's beneath the mask kind of thing. But for me as a fan, that ship sailed in 2002. So
yeah,
since all these other elements of his character are canon, I want to dive in and explore them and have fun with them and let them, build up this complex character. And I think for me, the mystery will still be alive because he's still going to be he's a character who can have a lot of conflicting instincts, right? So I think you're still going to have that mystery of, like, you push Boba Fett and you don't know what you're going to get, right?
Yeah, and look, it's already, just from seeing Temuera Morrison playing him in Mando and the energy he brings to it, it's a strong, stoic, violent energy at times, very strong character, but who's not over there just laughing it up with Din Djarin and telling jokes and everything. It's still the same character. It's still the man behind the mask. And the way I look at it is, you, me, and so many other people take these deep dives into Star Wars, it's almost as if these characters are real. So the way I look at it is, whether or not, Boba Fett is a mystery to me, he's not a mystery to himself. These things exist. These life events exist. And if we can explore them, especially based around certain themes or these big important questions, that's going to be a lot of fun for me.
Absolutely. And I think dealing specifically with his post-Sarlacc journey, I think that's going to be there in a very concrete way. And I think that's important because it's really going to tell us who he is now. How did he come to be this guy who's like, I'm not just going to go back to bounty hunting. I'm not a hunter anymore. I'm a leader and I'm going to change the game.
Yeah. I was at this Shmodown event of the week, and I had a chance to chat with our pal Andres Cabrera. And he asked me, are you excited for Boba Fett? I said, yeah, I've always been excited for any new Star Wars, but I think it was lower on my scale of excitement. Only because I just didn't know what to expect. And when that first teaser comes out, and the first line is, you and I broke down, Joseph, I'm not a bounty hunter. Take your nostalgia and throw it out the window. It's something new. You got me right there. And I'm not worried about this. I'm not worried about, learning what Kenobi was doing in or off the desert in those 19 years. I do want to explore these characters. Those stories exist. So mystery be damned for my money. Let's find some stuff out.
Yeah, I think there's still going to be plenty of mystery. I think there's still going to be plenty of stuff in the old Boba Fett can.
I agree with that. So we'll find out soon enough. Book of Boba Fett comes out December 29th. We'll be breaking it down here on Force Center, of course. Coming up with some questions shortly here. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, Joseph, what is our Force Center recommends? An audiobook we think everyone should try out on us.
We are recommending the audiobook of Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. It is the big kickoff to the High Republic era, which a ton of listeners, a ton of fans are really enjoying. If you're considering checking it out, this is the place to start.
This is the place to start, indeed. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. On the other side, your questions here on 4Center.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to 4Center, episode 381. We're here in our Super Star Destroyer of our fleet, our Boba Fett's mystery of our story. That's silly. Okay.
We're in Boba Fett's can.
We're in Boba Fett's can. We are going to take a look at some wonderful questions. Joseph, what do we got?
Yeah, as always, we have two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We'll go to Twitter first. Michael Gibbons says, okay, so this could be an entire podcast episode, but let's have some fun. As we know, Yoda has been training Jedi for generations, and every teacher has their favorites. Who do you think was Yoda's? Dooku? A Skywalker? Some unknown child who used to bake him bread? This is a very fun question. Yoda has taught Jedi for hundreds of years, as he will happily tell you. Where do you go with this question? Who do you think might be a favorite of Yoda's?
I mean, if you and I don't make a Liam pull the shades joke, we're failing. Clearly.
Liam killed it. I mean, I think Liam, Liam gets all the credit in that scene because we hear his name. But the child who actually comes up with the correct answer, J.K. Bertola, let's give put some respect on his name.
I agree with that. My thought is Yoda would probably remain pretty centered and balanced with his choice or his answer, right? He might be playing some games, not answering it. But I've never been a school teacher. I've taught some classes, everything. But like I've talked before, I've been a baseball coach. It's the only experience I have. And I can undoubtedly say I had my favorites, right? The kid in left field. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
I just said the kid in left field that during a playoff game, when a line drive was hit down to him and we all looked over and he was on his knees putting a big wad of grass in his glove. Not going to say he was my favorite.
that kind of answers my question. I was curious how the different young ball players became your favorite. Did you gravitate towards kids who reminded you of yourself? Did you gravitate towards kids who just didn't need as much help because they just had their bleep together?
There's a couple of those, and this is, when tying it directly to Yoda, I would love to answer Luke or see if we can conjure up some kind of connection to an Avar Chris or a Loden Greatstorm, all these new, wonderful, powerful Jedi we're learning about. But I think the answer is still out there in the sense of Yoda probably would name some unknown Jedi that is so-called less skillful and overcame obstacles, within and without them to live this kind of quiet life of service. And the reason I'll tie it back to the baseball thing and answer your question more directly, Joseph, is Andrew was his name, came from a family of athletes. Dad was really great. They moved to my hometown. I coached up in Rio Grande, California. They moved from like the Midwest or something. And they put him on my team. I didn't even draft him. They're like, hey, this new kid's here. Turns out I basically had Babe Ruth on my team. Like, he was just super skilled. He was 10. He was everything. And it was so nice. He was so polite. Remember writing him, I wrote all the player, my players a letter at the end of the season to talk about not just baseball, but life. And I remember telling that kid, I said, you might not, I hope you end up playing in the major leagues, but you might not, because it's a hard path to get there. But I just know that whatever you're going to do, you're going to be one of the leaders in the room because of who you are as a person, right? He was a little bit of an Avar Chris, just this light in the dugout. But he was great. But my answer would be, like, there was this kid named Carter who couldn't hit. He was a little slow on the base pass. He was really frustrated one day. And I remember I said, show up early before the game next time. Let's you and I work on something. And he did. And he told his mom and dad, and they dropped him off early. And we just did some drills. And that day he got two big hits, and the pride on his face of just that effort and result and the willing to do it. And he was not going to go play in the major leagues. And I don't know, what's funny is I still think of these as kids. I think they're all in the early 30s now. scary. I was just so proud of that. And I think Yoda would see that. Yes, Luke's another version of the Chosen One, just like Anakin and these superstars. But I bet there's a Jedi 500 years ago that didn't get all the skills, had struggled for certain things, but just overcame it, worked hard, and lived a true life of Jedi service.
Yeah, no, that's great. I my main experience being in that kind of position is I taught a weeks-long class and helped young teens at the time write a whole show, an hour-long show. And it was really like developing with them, what do you want to say about the world? You can go anywhere with your imagination, but here's our budget. And, like, it was everything from acting to producing. I think the class was called Produce It.
Yeah.
And they ended up putting on a show, and that was really, really fun. To go, like, I have all this information and I know how I would do it, but I need to get them to find the way that speaks to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself drifting towards, like, there was one kid who really reminded me of myself, had a similar sense of humor, and was pretty forward moving and pretty productive. And I kind of checked myself, was like, I don't want to show favoritism to this kid because he reminds me of myself. But then the kid that I remember is a kid who is just incredibly different than me, was sometimes kind of disruptive, but the disruption came from just being like, I love theater. I love comedy. And he would challenge me, and it was in good ways. Cause then I would realize, like, oh, I'm kind of just saying something like it's true because it's been my experience. And now I'm really happy to be challenged by this kid to go, like, oh, yeah, this is why I think it. Does that make sense to you? Let's try it, you know?
Mm, yeah.
So it's a really good and insightful experience to question what you know, which is obviously we know is a part of the Jedi philosophy of you should always be questioning things. Sometimes questioning things will just make you go, yes, this is a time-honored truth, and I have questioned it yet again, and I stick by it. And other times, maybe we should change that.
Great.
I'll say for Yoda that in canon, he compliments Kenobi a lot. Like,
yes.
I'm a big Obi-Wan Kenobi fan, so I don't want to just come running out here and say Obi-Wan Kenobi is clearly, even though he wasn't actually Yoda's Padawan, just taught when he was a youngling, clearly. But he does compliment Kenobi a lot. And I think that Yoda compliments Kenobi because he is so like, let's just get this done. You know, he's somebody who Obi-Wan can definitely be snarky and egotistical and a little vain and a little judgy sometimes, but his heart is so pure Jedi of I'm so clear that my role is to help others that I think Yoda sees that in Kenobi and really likes that. I think ultimately I would love for this answer to be that Yoda's favorite student is a Jedi that we haven't met yet. And when I started thinking about that, I got so excited, right? Because Yoda's been training Jedi for so long that Yoda's probably had this life experience multiple times where there's some Padawan in some time period before the High Republic when Yoda was around, when the child showed up, right? Then taught him as a youngling, like Yoda teaches many younglings. And then this student became Padawan of Yoda, a knight, a master, served for decades. Served well, maybe challenged Yoda every once in a while, and Yoda had to go, good point, the mystery Padawan. This now Jedi Master grows to old age, and Yoda maybe kindly sits on his deathbed, and this child dies in front of Yoda, passes into the Force in front of Yoda, and Yoda has barely put on a new wrinkle in that time.
Right.
Whole birth to death life experience. I think that there's got to be a great story of who that Jedi is to Yoda. Where like the first time I walked through a whole life with another being, maybe means a lot to him.
Yeah, and what that would mean to talk about the burden of masters and mentors as they grow beyond us, and that includes that going to the next plane of existence, and that'd be one if that first time it hits Yoda, that'd be something.
Yeah. Thinking about that, too, is like we talk about that Revenge of the Sith scene a lot where Yoda gives Anakin advice that he needs to hear, but is debatably a little perfunctory about it of like, don't mourn people. Don't miss them.
Right.
Just be happy you knew them and they're gone now. And great.
It's all good.
And you can see maybe when you think about it that way of how many, Padawans has Yoda outlived that he's got that much grace and acceptance about life and death.
Yeah, that's great. We get a little story on that, right?
Absolutely. Come on. Great question, Michael. Very, very fun. Any other thoughts on that one before we move on, Ken?
I mean, we all said some wonderful stuff. I mean, it's still Liam, but whatever.
It's always Liam. Look, when you nail the shades, that's all you need to be a good Jedi. Close those shades when told. Moving on to a question from Glondro 007. Appropriately for somebody with 007 in their handle, Glondro says, who is the deadliest gunslinger in the Star Wars universe? Ken, how do you approach this one? Do you think that there is a person who is just playing more skilled, or do you think it really is a situation-based?
Situation-based is a great way to start to look at it, and then just kind of what your definition of gunslinger is. This goes to our bounty hunter conversation of it's such a class of warrior in Star Wars. It's a video game class to choose from if you're about to play Star Wars. Because I would say growing up, Han Solo definitely is he's got that gunslinger vibe by design in a lot of ways. But I think Han is over the course of his life has probably pulled the trigger less than the times that he didn't pull the trigger. I think, in other words, I think he's not just firing crazy and willy nilly through the galaxy and tries to talk himself out of more than shooting out of situations. But when necessary, he shoots first. We know this. I just started running through almost like a roll call of what that really means to me. And, you know, Fennec's rep is growing. We've seen that both in Mando and like you mentioned in Bad Batch. Boba Fett, I'd say he's a gunslinger. I think Jango is too. And Boba's is just, there's a lot of just pure violence. He almost doesn't need a gun if you're going to a literal gunslinger, like an old West kind of vibe. All that to say, I worked my way through a lot of choices. I just, based on what we've seen and who's the deadliest, I really would say Din Djarin. Because he gets out of so many jams. He likes these odds. He gets out of them. He likes the numbers. 4 stormtroopers, that's great. I got this.
He is a very quick draw. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have seen him fight when he is kind of dispassionate, when it's just, hey, look, I'm trying to pick up this dumb Mithril because he didn't pay his bills.
Yeah.
And we've seen him quick draw in situations where the things he cares about absolute most are on the line. So I think Din's a very good pick. Mm-hmm. I tend to look at everything, certainly Force users, but I think it extends to blaster slingers as well, that it is situational. Part of it, there's skill, but then there's also like age, atmosphere. Are your nerves getting to you? Do you have an emotional relationship to the person you're facing, right? You know, is Toro Calican a better gunslinger than Fennec Shand? No. But the situation didn't go well, you know?
Right.
So I always have that caveat, but I think if you could ask Coleman Trevor, he'd probably say Jango Fett. You can't, because Jango Fett's a really good gunslinger. But so Jango's up there. Cad Bane is, you see him just literally, if you're just going to go to quick draw, right?
Yes.
You see him literally quick draw blaster very, very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that, you see, you know, it's funny because we were getting ready to talk a little bit more about Cad Bane on the Clone Wars Report. I was watching some of those episodes this weekend, and he's so good and confident, and often in this arc we're going to be reviewing, doesn't even have a blaster. It made me think about that. I didn't know this question was coming, but I was like, man, he's really good.
He's really good. He's very, very deadly. So there you go. That's our definitive list of about 7.
Yeah.
All to us, the deadliest gunslinger in the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah.
All right. Any further thoughts before we move on?
No, I just don't want to get caught in the crosshairs of those characters.
Nope, not at all. I am not the deadliest gunslinger in the Star Wars universe, put it that way.
Yeah.
Or even in video games. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. This is a deeper dive one. This comes to us from David Osmo. So David wrote a great and thoughtful post on the call for questions that we post on Patreon. And it is a bit too long to read the entire thing. But if you are a patron, I suggest you go check it out. There are some great thoughts that David has kind of building to these central questions. And the real central idea that David is writing about is all of the continuing interpretations and debate about balance in the Force. And in particular, David was really reacting to some of these Lucas quotes from the Star Wars Archive 1977 to 1983 book. These are quotes that Lucas gave when he was interviewed by Paul Duncan. So, Ken, I'm going to read these essential Lucas quotes, and then we're going to dive into these ideas of balance in the Force.
Great.
So Lucas says in these interviews, you have the light side and the dark side in you. Your job as a human being is to try to keep those things in balance so you don't go over to the dark side. It's not possible to go all the way over to the light side, so people struggle to keep on the light side because it's harder. That's what a Jedi is. A Jedi is someone that's pushing the light side as far as they can. It's not one thing or another. It's like an applause meter. If you're turning to the dark side, then the applause meter is going over that side. But if you can control your emotions, say, this is the Force's will, this is natural, you can't do anything about it, and just accept it, then you can get back to the light side. Otherwise, you'll be in pain forever. Obviously, there are people that just do the easy thing, Lucas continues, and the easy thing is to be angry, which turns to hate. It's not an active thing, it's a passive thing. Being angry with somebody is a passive thing. You have to work to not be angry the rest of your life. Bitter, angry, and of course, that leads to suffering. It's the bad side. On the other side, you have to be diligent all the time, like a Buddhist monk or a priest, to forgive and accept the fact and turn the other cheek. So there's a lot of clarity in there. There's a lot of context that it's coming from an interview. But I just want to dive in, because that's what David's questions are getting to, about kind of he presents some of his takes on this and wanted to know our takes on this. I want to know your reaction to how this interpretation, you know, from the creator of Star Wars, of Balance in the Force works. Does this make sense to you in the context of Star Wars? We'll talk about it in the context of real life, which Lucas is also talking about. But but first, I just want to start with, does this resonate with you? Does this make sense when you think about this is the explanation about what the Balance of the Force is in the story of Star Wars?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I've read this one myself and read this part of that wonderful book. I suggest anyone saves up much allowance money, many allowance weeks to pick up that wonderful book. I can't wait to get the prequel one myself. I love it. It means so much to me, Joseph, because I'm someone, I sometimes make jokes at myself and my, you know, intelligence level, whatever. I know it's just jokes, but I just sometimes need things really broken down to a simple level because I can get lost in the weeds. And balance in Star Wars is one of those things where it's like, especially when it's Jedi versus Sith, right? Green team, red team,
right.
Blue team, red team, if you want to look at it that way too. And it just has never made sense to me that, well, the Sith being around, that's not balanced. That's not balanced. The Jedi got to win. They got to wipe him out. And then kind of as Star Wars goes on or you get older and, then it's Lor San Tekka starts talking about his thoughts on balance. And there's just so much where, you can get lost in the wonderful weeds. It's a great philosophical discussion in Star Wars. But this George saying this and putting this out there, this isn't about just Jedi and Sith. It's about us and isn't on an individual basis, but it's about Star Wars characters on an individual level as well. And it just really works and becomes more clear what it is all about and how the dangers and how, to be angry is to be natural. Padme said that, but to not, you don't want to use that rage as a weapon. That's not necessary to do that rage thing. I just love hearing George break it down to this real simple, it's still complicated, but simple way to look at it for me.
Yeah, I think it's really great to have that clarity that, we're not talking about teams and this isn't just about Force users, even within the context of Star Wars. Like this applies, to Han Solo and Dio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can have debates about droids. But yeah, this is about individuals, right? And there's the dark and light side of the Force, and the Force users, when they rely on their emotions, they can have a greater impact because of this power. But this is about every individual in the galaxy. Right. And it's not about, I can totally understand the thought that people would have, and I know some fans still have this perspective, and they want to have respect for people interpreting the story as they see fit. But this idea of that, well, the Jedi are the blue team, the light side team, and mm-hmm. the Sith are the red side and the red team, and it's balanced to have two teams. So how could that be balanced if the Jedi defeat right. the Sith, right? Yeah. And I think that's an understandable question to have, and I think this this quote goes a lot toward answering that directly. And I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of storytelling in Star Wars that does too, but this is a very direct quote. The idea that the balance of the Force is nature, right? It is the natural reality that there are sad, dark things, violent things, and there, buoyant, joyful light, right? There's death and life and rebirth. Every individual feels joy and pain and love and anger. And all those things are natural. And what happens when the Force goes out of balance is when too many individuals or powerful individuals choose to act on that dark side. And that applause meter that Lucas is talking about is, it's partially about just stewing, in your own gut with your anger. But it's then what happens when you act on that anger? Well, then you hurt somebody else. And then that person, learns that's the way the world is. And then they hurt somebody else. Right. And it's when all of these dark side actions of anger and fear and pain spread out that things go out of balance, which is why the Jedi need to, keep the Sith from lashing out. I think what I love the most about this quote, Ken, particularly the top of it, where Lucas is talking about, that's what a Jedi is. On our Clone Wars report discussion, I talk a lot about justice for the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we say it jokingly, but what I really mean by it is this core great idea is that the Jedi understand I'm not perfect. Yeah. I'm not just team light side and I'm always glowing. I am always going to be tempted by the dark side. I'm always going to feel anger, or, you know, in High Republic, it's so great about showing how people feel a lot of fear of, like, I'm not going to be good enough, or somebody else, another Jedi, is going to judge me. Like, they have all this potential to go over to that dark side applause meter. Mm-hmm. And what a Jedi is going, I am going to actively acknowledge that I have the potential for that. And I am going to strive to stay on this noble path of not giving in and acting on dark emotions, but always acting out of, you know, love and joy and preservation and help of others. Mm-hmm. I love that portrait of the Jedi of, it's not that they're perfect. It's that they're working really hard to be the best they can.
Yeah.
What I particularly love about that is that's a noble and great idea of what a hero is not somebody who's just born perfect and golden, but somebody who works to be the best they can. But it really shows the other side of it. Like, the Jedi make lots of mistakes, right? Particularly in that Clone Wars era, which is why we're talking about justice for the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in the story of Star Wars, what happens when the Jedi slip and make mistakes is it opens the door for, like, all this cynicism and whataboutism, right?
Mm.
Of mm. You got characters like the Sith or bounty hunters, or, you know, other people who, you know, give in to anger and fear and selfishness. And they see a Jedi slip for a minute and they go, see, right. It's all a lie. They just want power. They just want control. If they slip for a minute, then my view of the galaxy is true, that everybody is just out for themselves. Everybody is just out for power. And they use that slip in the Jedi as a justification for giving in to this easy path of anger and hate. It is the direct manipulation that Sidious does to Anakin in the great opera box scene in Revenge of the Sith. Like, we're all the same. Everybody just wants power. And here are the Jedi saying, nope, look, we slip. We make mistakes. We are not perfect. Mm. We're trying to be our best, you know?
Yeah. Again, breaking it all down is just hearing this. When years ago, I remember there was a specific moment in my fandom where this question might have been proposed to me, you know, well, what is balance? And how is darkness and light exist together? How is that about, you know, and just as it relates to the Sith, and just this idea of the Jedi standing as a guard between that, almost as if it's a dam, right? And there's water on one side and, you know, a city on the other, and the Jedi up there to make sure the water, which is going to be there, doesn't get so high that the dam breaks. Which also makes me think of Vader getting his lightsaber from what's that first Jedi, Fila, whatever, the one for the
comic. Yeah, Kirik, I think.
Kirik. But literally, they're battling on top of a dam, right? The city is destroyed beneath it. So I just, yeah, it all just kind of it helps me understand it on a smaller level, everything you're saying there, of everything what George is talking about, and the purpose of the Jedi to stand as best they can on top of that dam.
Yeah. And I love this idea that you can't, that Luke is saying, his philosophy that he tried to put in Star Wars is, you can't go too far to the light side, because what is too much joy? You know?
Right.
And in particular, I think a big part of it is that why they stay on the light side is they don't try to change the truth that there is balance, that sad things happen, right? Yeah. Like, I sometimes, when I did a Star Wars counseling episode about balance in the Force, the way it helped me to break it down is just like, imagine there's a Porg, a Jedi, and a Sith. They don't walk into a bar.
Yes.
They're just sitting on a nice hill, right?
Yep.
And if the Porg died of old age, or even if it got scooped up by a natural predator, the Jedi'd probably go, that's sad. Mm-hmm. But that happens. If a Sith, for no reason, just walked up and like, this Porg, I'm going to cut it in two because I'm angry. That's when the Jedi's blade comes out and blocks it, right?
Yep.
And that to me is like, that's what the balance of the Force is preserving the natural way of things, the natural reality, instead of lashing out at the world with anger.
And not going around slicing down any predator before it has a chance to get the Porg.
Yes.
Letting go and trusting the natural cycle of things.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's all about porgs.
It's all about porgs. It's the balance in the porgs. If you replace balance in the force with balance in the porgs, everything unlocks, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I did want to talk about it in real world terms too, because Lucas certainly is. He's not just saying in Star Wars, he's saying you. This is my analogy about my real life philosophy. And I think that sometimes maybe some of these conversations can get extra muddy because we're talking mm-hmm. about both space wizards and ourselves. So for yourself, what do you agree with this in real world terms with how you approach your life, how you see the world, or is there parts that bump for you?
No, it's all pretty in line. It's a very spiritual philosophy that's always been there, and I, you know, having that kind of upbringing, it can connect to some of these big themes there. So yeah, it's become more and more important, and it's weird as I get older, and you and I keep talking about Star Wars every week, and are blessed to have this podcast feed, and just the reason I get even and more excited to talk about it. Even the Clone Wars report's a great example of you and I sit down to watch these episodes and break them down and talk about our action moments. All that stuff is fun. I'm ignited, a flame lights up in my soul when I just find something in this animated series that can apply to my real life, past and present and future, that's Star Wars. And that's, I think, what George has always been saying. It's not it's not Shatner in that SNL sketch of making fun of Trekkies, that whole famous sketch in the 80s, if y'all remember that. George isn't doing that when he says, because sometimes he'll just say, y'all kind of take it too serious. I think what he just means is you're all debating over, what X-Wing is better and this and that, which is all part of the fun. Don't forget, the whole purpose of this is this putting of this these ideas of how best to navigate this world. And as I get older, I know less, right? The old thing. And Star Wars, because you and I study it every week for the show, it's just this thing I take so much inspiration for. So this and some of the other things I've talked about a lot recently that have just they've met me at this point in my life where I need to hear them of the stuff at Alphabet Squadron, the Sentinel droids kind of, Palpatine kept a list of everyone who'll smudge a report because he knows if you smudge that report, you're going to take one step farther the next time, or you're more likely to. That is life in a nutshell. Light and dark exist in all of us. And just, it breaks it down to the choices are on a micro level, and I fail and succeed every day. Right.
Man. Yeah. Daily. That's such a great way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Daily. And what I love about Lucas using the applause meter thing, which we've this quote's gone around a few times, and I love it every time I hear it, because to me, that applause meter can be brought down if it's going too far to the dark side, right? it can be brought down. There's things that will start to move it. We talk about that rage concept. I think once you weaponize that hate, it's going to weaponize that fear, or your own fear. That's the applause meter. It might be broken. You got to be careful. But I love this idea because it does keep with Star Wars 2 and this idea of redemption, of you can continue to make choices that will lower that applause meter.
Right, yeah.
Back down to light. And it's just a simple concept, but I love seeing it like that.
Yeah, it's never too late to change your applause meter.
Yes.
It's very nice. Yeah, I think for me, some of this Jedi philosophy, getting to discuss it, look into it by doing this podcast, for me, there is balance in Star Wars. I love just talking about the weirdos and my favorite fights and chases and all that stuff. Star Wars is just thrilling, and the aesthetics are fun, and all that stuff you can absolutely dig into. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think that there's absolutely this balance of like, but what is it all about in terms of philosophy? And for me, that philosophy is really helpful in just day-to-day interactions. Star Wars, of course, is not the only place you can find these ideas. Right, just been packaged with lightsabers, so it spoke to my soul since I was, incredibly young. Yes. So for me, it is really helpful to be like, man, I'm really mad now, and maybe I'm even justified in being angry, and I want to send this email, but it won't help anything because that person that I'm yelling at probably didn't mean to do the thing that upset me. Yes. And it's not going to help anything. In fact, it's going to make things worse. That accepting that my anger is real and valid from my perspective, or sometimes somebody actually truly has wronged me and I feel it's valid. I've examined, I've talked to other people, like, I'm right to be furious. Yes. But what will happen if I indulge it, or what will happen to just my life if that's all, if I just stew in it? Because I've had times like that where I've done damage to relationships because I feel like I've been wronged. And sometimes I think in retrospect, I was right. Other times I think I was like, nah, you were not.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I pushed people away because I just couldn't stop stewing on it, you know, and yeah. I was miserable to be around, you know. So just, you know, remembering how much this great fantasy story about spaceships and laser swords can have a day-to-day impact is really powerful for me.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing that particularly wanted to talk about in real world is I always want to be careful that I think some of the things that Lucas is saying can be taken out of context, right? Mm. In a dangerous way. Like this idea of accept what you can't control. For me, I take that as I know what I have power over, and I can do everything I can to influence things the way that I want them to go. But there's some things I can't change, you know?
Right.
And that's the way we all are. And if we want to make a change as a society, we have to pool all of our power together so we can make a change, right? Mm. I think that's the idea of accept what you can't control. But I think that there's a little bit of danger in that to me, that accept what you can't control does not mean be inactive.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean don't engage with the problems of the world. It doesn't mean sit on the fence and just point out that everything's wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't control it. Somebody else should do it. You know, like, yeah. I think there's a danger of it being, I don't think that's what Lucas is saying. I think there's a danger of it being misinterpreted that way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing for me that I just want to acknowledge is I think the anger stuff really speaks to me on a personal level about not giving it into anger. But then I think about that from the perspective of, you know, people who have a lot to be angry about because, mm-hmm. you know, the world has been set up in a way that is totally unfair to them. Right.
Right.
And anger is just got to be a day-to-day reality. And I think for me, I always want to be aware that saying, well, don't give in to anger can be easier for some of us than others. Right.
Right.
And I think for me, the big thing about anger is it can be a good motivator when something truly awful has happened in it or is ongoing happening and has to be changed, right?
Yeah.
That's where for me, it's helpful that a part of this philosophy is like anger is real and valid and it can make you go, this has to change.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's when it really becomes about, you know, where are you acting from? The anger is real. It's valid. Are you just lashing out to let your anger out? Or do you take that anger and go, I am motivated by this anger to find positive, proactive steps to make change?
Yeah. Yeah. If the Sith comes by to slice the porg in two, that's going to make you angry. What do you do with the next steps? And I would never suggest that anything, even on a personal, emotional, daily level, is easy. I think that's also part of the point too. And some of the stories of Star Wars are little lessons of when things go wrong. But I think you're right to say, it's not there. There's no shame in that being a starting point, which might even be something that Padme was touching on there.
I think so. I think that's why she was like, it is understandable that you are angry. Let's deal with that and accept that honestly before we can then move forward with how do you feel about how you use that anger, Anakin?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like I said, none of it designed to, you know, nothing we're saying here is designed to say it's just all easy.
No. And in fact, I think that's what's another great thing about this Lucas quote of like, yes, it is. It's day to day.
Yeah.
The Jedi are trying to be that. They aren't just like, I did it.
Yeah.
I became a knight and now I'm perfect every day.
Yeah. No, and without a doubt, a large part of George's purpose for this whole story, why I think it ties into so many other things in Star Wars things, even beyond George, and why Luke did not show up and destroy every First Order soldier around right then and there, you know? It's
all that's my final thought on this, going back to the Star Wars of it all. I think this discussion is a great way into Last Jedi if you've struggled with Luke, right? Because mm-hmm. Luke's grumpiness, his cynicism, his inaction, it's all connected to this great compassion because he's been trying so hard to always, always be on the light side applause meter. And he slipped for a second and he feels so bad that he slipped from that noble path and he's trying so hard to find his way back to it. You know,
The Last Jedi is just a applause meter movie.
And he literally did in the theater get applause when it was revealed. When I saw it, there was applause in the theater.
Yes.
When it was revealed, he had force projected to crate. So good job, Luke Skywalker. Yeah. All right. We are going to close out with a fun question from Andrew Holmes. Andrew says, hi, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer. If you're a newer listener, Jennifer Landa, the great Jennifer Landa, started the podcast with us. She has been on a break raising Padawans, but sometimes you'll hear us mention the great Jennifer Landa. Her, you can go Google her, find all of her great Star Wars content and past episodes here on Force Center. All right. Andrew continues. In celebration of the release of the incredible documentary Get Back and knowing Ken's Beatlemania, I was wondering which Star Wars characters do you think would best represent John, Paul, George, and Ringo if the Beatles existed in the Star Wars universe? Mm. Thanks for all your continued joy for the galaxy. Cheers. Cheers to you, Andrew. Oh, Ken. How long did you spend thinking about this one?
Not as much as you would think, or maybe I would want, because so fresh off of Get Back, I was thinking about the Beatles and that in terms of that doc and who they are in that doc, which is who they are probably throughout the course of their life and career. But there's just some real specific things in there that inspired me rather quickly. I don't know. As always, I don't know if the answers are right, but I've got them.
You know, you have spent a lot of time with that documentary. So I think what I'd like to do is, share my, possibly more wild selections. We'll see.
Yeah.
First, and then we'll close with yours. Is that cool?
I love it. And you're a Beatle fan too. When everyone, you know, you're not just Guns N' Roses and Sinatra. I'm definitely obsessed with them over the course of my life too. So yeah, go for it.
Yeah, it's been really fun thinking about, because I have not actively listened to them as much or engaged with them as much, and just thinking about how much they meant to me kind of in my teen years and into my 20s. And I think, you know, one of the albums that I had that I listened to a lot was White Album. And that's such a weird album, because it's just like them all kind of bringing their own thing to the table. But it's also just an explosion of like weird creativity. It's like it stretches in so many different directions. And I think one of the things that the Beatles really meant to me is seeing, you know, that, wow, one of the most famous and popular groups of artists ever are still experimenting and being wildly creative.
Right.
And that was, I think, one of the big influences for me. So along those lines, John Lennon was the hardest for me to figure out, but I'm going to go with Quinlan Voss.
Love that. That's great.
So Quinlan Voss is somebody who is clearly a Jedi committed to the light, but in the little bits of storytelling we get with him in canon, he's also got this really kind of wild and cheeky side where he's like, look, I'm dedicated to pacifism. I do my job well. But also, look, I want to have some fun with it. I want to figure out what's over there. And I feel like that's what's so powerful about John Lennon, of like, look, I could do the same stuff we started doing all day, but I really want to go way over there and go, what's under that?
Yeah.
Paul McCartney, this has been influenced by a lot of the discussion about the documentary, that he had to fill the role of leader, even though maybe he had didn't want to always be the leader, but felt like it was his responsibility. So Paul McCartney is Padme Amidala to me.
Love it. Okay. Love it.
It just absolutely has to take that that bit of leadership, but still, look, has a lot of creativity. George, this is a weird one, but I went with Poe Dameron.
Okay, interesting.
Just a lot of charm and a lot of ability to step up to be the leader, but not always called upon to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And finally, Ringo Starr is Chewbacca.
That's great. That's great.
He's consistent. He's there for you. Sometimes he's silly, but he's just holding it all together all the time.
Oh, that's great. Chewy.
I'm so curious to see if we have any overlaps.
we have one, but not an overlap.
Ooh.
So here we go. Yeah, I'll start. I'll go in the same order you went with. So John's the hardest one, I think, in a lot of ways, because there's a lot of different faces and personalities of John. And a lot of it was look, I'll be blunt, at times John, I would call him complicated and problematic at times. Like he's in his upbringing, his mother not around, then coming back and then dying, his aunt raising him in a way, his father reappearing but just having left the family for most of his life. I mean, there's a lot I look at that and then tie it to John wanting to be something, something good, something positive, something in his heart, and sometimes fighting against that. Even going into the Lost Weekend stuff in the 70s out in L.A., where he lost the plot, man. He was out here, the importance of Yoko in his life, what she did mean, and anchor she did become, and often pushing him forward. I think for better, more than worse, pushing him to do certain things, pushing him to find out who he really is. So all that to say, without turning this into a Beatle podcast, I went with Han Solo. Han being wanting to be a scoundrel and a smuggler and all that kind of stuff because he kind of needed it. And there's a certain freedom in it and in a certain kind of victory over the life he came out of, and knowing, but deep down inside, maybe there's something better for me. And there's a constant struggle, in that, like you said, he is someone who would, push the boundaries, want to explore, want to, 360 degrees of experiencing just everything that's coming his way, the rock star life and then baking bread in the late 70s. Anyways, I just see a lot of the struggle of identity that runs throughout his entire life. I see it connect with Han.
I think that is a very, very good answer. And I can also see Han Solo pissing people off at a press conference by saying who he was bigger than.
Yes. Yes. No, there's a lot of that and doing it in a charming way. So you almost... and John eventually quite, directly choosing a side as Han does as well. So,
Great one.
Yeah. With Paul. So this is interesting. I had a couple thoughts too, but I'm very inspired about this kind of, I won't call it a new view of Paul, but I was talking to Scott Mance this past weekend too, super Beatle fan as well. And, he's always been a Paul fan. I've been a George guy, when you start breaking up, which Beatle you like more and everything. He's always, to be clear, has always been a Paul guy in the way you're a Kenobi guy. But he's always, he just says, he said Paul came off looking not better, but just like came off looking real different to a lot of folks. And a lot of people maybe got what he was trying to do. And what you're talking about, you mentioned it, Joseph, just this like someone's got to lead us. Otherwise, we're going to be destroyed. Like, and maybe that's part of it, but maybe we should, but I kind of don't like it that I'm in this position, but here I am. So I went to Poe Dameron.
Oh yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Right. And I just went to that scene at the foot of Leia's body in a bed, just like, I can't do this. And how do you do this? And Last Jedi, Poe learns these big valuable lessons and also learns that some of the things he was doing in the name of leading weren't right. And Paul has a lot of those revelations in and around the time we get back. I think the doc addresses that a little bit of him going, I understand what I do. I understand what some of the stuff I've done is wrong, but here I am in this position. And I think that's a lot of Poe going into Rise of Skywalker and then coming out of it. I think he's much better for it as a leader, and Paul eventually becomes the leader of his own show, so to speak, with the wings and Linda and everything. But I think that's always been at times been looked down upon as the bossy dude to try to keep it going. And I think you can see it. I personally saw it in a different light with this document.
Oh, that's great. Very well reasoned on the Poe connection.
Yeah. And then my guy, George. I'm a George guy. I went with Qui-Gon Jinn. I'm with Qui-Gon. He's got sage advice. He often doesn't say much. Gets overlooked, but then kind of has a explosion of popularity later. And then, he's a little bit of a rebel. He's got a sly smile and doesn't always follow the rules. And George was his own man that just was in a system that he often was butting heads with. And so he looked back and he's considered so wise but also he made his mistakes along the way too. And Qui-Gon's going to make mistakes on the side of the light. And I think he and George would have a lot to talk about.
You are making me just want to see Qui-Gon Jinn fill in for George Harrison in his role in A Hard Day's Night in particular, where he just falls into being a fashion model for a few minutes. Sure, goes with the flow.
It's grotty, dead grotty. The final one, Chewbacca's a great answer for Ringo. I think everyone already knew who Ringo was, but that doc really kind of highlighted he's just kind of this good dude center. He's a little bit of the glue. He'll be there, but he's got his opinions too. In fact, he was actually the first to leave the band for 2 weeks or so during the White Album sessions or whatever it was back then. But my answer is Wedge Antilles.
Oh yeah. Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah, Wedge is always there. He's going to stick around as best he can. He's going to do what's needed. He's not going to get all the glory. And then at one point he shows up and says, "Let's fly, Lando," which is similar to peace and love, and just kind of people. Not everyone knows who he is, who's the old guy in the fancy fly jacket? Like, who's this guy? But there's something about him I like. And so Wedge Antilles taking out the Death Star right there with Lando, but doing it from the support position. So there you go.
That is very, very well-reasoned, very well thought out. I can't wait to do this for every classic rock band.
I think we should. I think we absolutely should.
Great question, Andrew. Thank you. That was a ton of fun, insightful for both fans of Star Wars and Beatles, I hope, or thought-provoking at the very least. Thank you as well to David for the big question about balance in the Force,
yeah.
And Galandro 007 and Michael Gibbons as well. All great questions. That's it for the questions, Ken.
That's it. Well, we are almost out of here, but first we're going to let you know where you can find us. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available in a lot of different spots, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Just made the big transition over to Acast. So happy to be here. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get into our Discord, where you can have even more detailed discussions about which Beatle is which Star Wars character or balance in the Force as well. You can follow me at Cadnapsock or go to my website, cadnapsock.com. From there, you can get information on upcoming comedy shows like Washington, D.C. with Mark Ellis and get tickets for our four show run out at the Comedy Loft. You can also click on my charity spotlight tab, which has a lot of charities that I've supported and put my heart and soul and efforts behind as well. We mentioned a lot of them here on the show, but go there as well and find one that maybe fits your desire to connect and support. Joseph, what do you have?
Yeah, you can find me on social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I have a lot of fun, in particular, sharing some of my action figures that I don't open. Some are opened as well, but it's more fun to share some of the packaged ones. Anyway, you can check that out on social media for all my other comedy adventures, my other podcast, Obsessed, comedy albums, shows I've written for, all kinds of stuff like that is on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
There you go, my friends. All right, we are out of here today. So for the secret lives of bounty hunters, the balance of the Force, and Wedge and Ringo and Chewbacca, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.